WFAE Podcasting is funded by Corporate Information Technologies, helping businesses take a proactive approach to technology. CIT, let us show you how good IT can be. corp-infotech.com.
Stop.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Under a political system like ours, one hopes that citizens are involved in dissecting the issues and becoming politically engaged. 4 years ago, a great multitude of young people discovered politics because of the promise of hope and change put forward by Barack Obama and came out to work for him, support him, and vote for him. He can thank those young people to a large degree for his election. Politics can be a messy business, and our system is set up to be deliberately slow, which can cause people to lose interest, even faith, in the system. And all signs point to a lower voter turnout this time around among those 30 and younger. Still, there are those who remain involved and are passionate about their political beliefs, and that is the case with our two guests today. Daniel Rufty is a 26-year-old Army veteran, UNC Charlotte student, member of the Mecklenburg County Young Republicans, and a delegate to the upcoming Republican National Convention in Tampa. He is with us in our Spirit Square studio along with Sam Spencer, who is 27, and president of the Young Democrats of North Carolina and a 2008 presidential elector who has worked with a number of campaigns since 2004. He will be a delegate to the Democratic National Convention. Welcome to both of you.
Good morning, Mike.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. What does an elector do?
So a presidential elector basically chooses the president and vice president of the United States. 538 of us meet across the state or across the country in each of our individual state capitals. And the interesting thing about it is that when you vote for president or vice president on your ballot in the fall, you're actually voting for a slate of Democratic, Republican, or Libertarian electors.
And are you bound to vote for the winner in the popular election?
That's an interesting legal question for the courts, but in North Carolina, technically, the law says yes.
But you could. Who would have stopped you for voting for John McCain, aside from yourself, of course?
Well, a fine from the state of North Carolina and a law that says I would have committed a misdemeanor.
Okay. You're both very young. When did your interest in politics and in elections and being actually involved in the party begin? Let me begin with you.
I got really interested after kind of seeing the experiences of this foreign policy. I was in the Army for 4 years, and I took an oath to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. And for me, I see this administration and this government going against the Constitution. It seems like they don't even look at it before they make policies or laws in general.
Administration, what have they done?
Well, I guess one of the things that I'm kind of appalled at is the bill that Obama signed on New Year's Eve. You know, while we were all out partying, he was signing the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act.
That allows indefinite military detention without charge or trial.
For U.S. citizens and non-U.S. citizens. So if that doesn't scare you.
Have they used that law at all yet within the continental United States?
Well, that's the thing about it. You won't know if they've used it or not. They don't have the right to talk to legal advice. They don't have a right to a due process, you know, that then we would be able to see if they've been charged or not.
Interestingly enough, as a Republican, you are on the side of the American Civil Liberties Union on this issue because they, too, are opposed to this. Where do the Democrats stand on this? Do you know? This is actually the first time I've heard this brought up.
Well, I know that the administration is following case law and Supreme Court decisions when it comes from the Hamdi and Hamidi decisions from the United States Supreme Court. And we know that Barack Obama has been doing an excellent job defending the United States of America because, I mean, we caught Osama bin Laden.
Except Democrats, including, I think, Mr. Obama, were very much upset with the way President Bush was conducting certain aspects
right.
of his administration with regard to detainment of people who were suspected of being terrorists in Guantanamo Bay. And now critics say that the Obama administration is far worse, is just as bad, perhaps far worse, than the Bush administration. How do we explain that? And how do Democrats feel about that? Because they campaigned against the Bush administration twice.
Yeah. We campaigned against the Bush administration twice. We campaigned to, you know, in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. We've got out of Iraq. We are approaching an end to the war in Afghanistan. And I think that's one of the big differences between the Democrats and the Republicans. I mean, we are trying to get the boots off the ground and back to the United States.
But this is a real civil liberties issue, this National Defense Authorization Act, it seems to me. If they can allow indefinite military detention, not civil detention, military right. detention, without charge or trial, is that for an indefinite period of time?
Yeah, absolutely. There's no limit to the detainment.
So what happened to habeas corpus?
Exactly. I mean, that's exactly my point. The habeas corpus is kind of known as the foundation of our liberty, and the habeas corpus is your day in court, your right to trial. Without it, I mean, you can be detained, like I said, indefinitely with no time limit in a military prison without any legal advice or legal, you know, you can't talk to your lawyer or anything.
So backing up, that is one of the things that got you, Daniel Ruffey, interested in politics. Were you a Republican prior to this when you were in the Army? Were you a Republican, identified as a Republican?
Yeah, I think that the Republican principles of the Republican Party fit me best.
Okay. We'll talk about what those are. Tell me why, Sam, you became a Democrat and when, and when you became active.
You know, I think I became a Democrat in 2000 when I read about, in Rolling Stone, about the Bush administration and what he was doing on when it came to capital punishment. And when I was a kid, you know, over at the Great Aunt Stella Center, actually, here in Charlotte, I saw, you know, Reuben Carter speak about the death penalty, and, you know, that was one of the issues that really got me really engaged because, you know, I felt very strongly about the fact that, you know, the government has no right to take away somebody's life. Then I got even more engaged in 2003 when, you know, the Iraq War came up, and we were in Fraser Park, just a little, you know, group of us students who had a student walk out and, you know, held a protest because, you know, we just didn't see the logic in the Iraq War. And, you know, over time, our opinion played out.
Were your parents Democrats or politically active?
I mean, my parents aren't politically active. They're actually both members of the media.
would they be identified as, would they self-identify with a political party? Since they're in the media, I will not make you name the party that they self-identify with.
I can't speak for them. I think they feel very strongly. I think they okay. Yeah.
What about you, Daniel? Were your parents Republicans, active in the party, or were they at all political?
Yes, sir. Both my mother and father are Republicans. My father voted for Gerald Ford, so longtime Republicans.
Okay. So let me ask you, because you were about to tell me, why you identify as a Republican? What is it about the Republican Party that makes you want to be not only a Republican but active in the party?
Yeah, well, I see the Republicans' principles of being free markets, non-intervention, policies of with regards to economics of free markets and allowing businesses to grow. I think those principles are very important, and I strongly agree with those.
Okay. Sam, the same question to you about being a Democrat.
Well, first, I think for young people, one of the most important things is the most fundamental right from which every single right and privilege that we have in this democracy flows from, and that's voting. And one big thing that, you know, myself and many young Democrats have been involved in both this year and back in 2007 when we got same-day voter registration passed is making sure that, you know, young people have the right to vote. So we've been strongly opposed to these voter ID, voter suppression bills that have come out that have been the focus, oddly enough, of, you know, Governor or Mayor McCrory's campaign. We've also been, you know, I feel very strongly about how the Democratic Party is the party of equality, you know, not just when it comes to civil rights or marriage equality, but how we're the party that wants to make sure that, you know, every person has a chance at the American dream. And at the same time, people who profit and people who benefit from living in the greatest country in the world pay their fair share.
But the Republicans would say that the Democrats want to be participating in a great social giveaway program, but not a trickle-down program, but a program that takes away from the rich and gives to people who are not willing to work.
I think that that's absolutely false. I mean, you've got people who obviously every now and then abuse the system, but what you see in government is that you have a lot of different government programs. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a lot like the interstate highway system. You know, here we use I-77 in Charlotte all the time. We know we need I-77, we need 485, we need I-85. Down in Florida, you know, people use I-4 to cross the state. People use I-95. They don't see, you know, that there's any benefit of having I-77 or I-85. But everywhere in almost everybody's life, there's a program that the government has had that has helped them along the way, whether it's something like Pell Grants, Medicare, Medicaid for, you know, young mothers who have who are single mothers with children. All along the way, there has been a helping hand that's a hand up and not a handout.
And some people would point to the Republicans, some Democrats would point to the Republicans and say that you're heartless, that you don't want to help people who need help, and that's the function of government to help, to provide for the general welfare. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think it really comes down to what do you think government's responsibilities are? You know, for me as a Republican, I think government should be limited, and I think the taxes should be limited also. I think government's responsibility is to protect life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And I think that those need to be, you know, their core principles, and we should follow the Constitution.
Okay.
What's stated in the Constitution is what the government can do, and nothing more, nothing less. That's what they can do. It's a handbook. It's an employee handbook for our government.
But like the Bible, isn't it open to interpretation?
Well, some of the things are kind of ambiguous in the Constitution, but some things are clearly stated.
Mm-hmm.
And what I notice in politics here lately, you know, with this administration and this government, is that they like to twist it to benefit them or to benefit their, you know, their voters. And I don't think that that's what government should be doing.
Because we have reached a point of absolute gridlock in Washington, where if it's a Democratic idea, if the Democrats say the sky is blue, the Republicans will say it's not, and vice versa. I would like to hear from each of you something good about the other party. I would like you, Daniel Rufty, to tell me one thing about the Democratic Party that is admirable.
I think that the Democratic Party, I think their core values are good with civil liberties. I think that, you know, Obama is not exactly following the Democratic Party and their voters, you know, with all these wars and some other things like that. But I do think that they themselves as voters in a party are strong for civil liberties.
Okay. And the same thing from you, Daniel. Something good about the Republican Party?
Well, absolutely. You know, I look at people like Senator Dick Lugar, Senator Chuck Hagel, you know, people who were willing to work across the aisle, made a big difference. And, you know, when I was an intern on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, when Joe Biden was the ranking member and Dick Lugar was the chair, you know, he was somebody who engendered and inspired respect from both sides of the aisle.
And why do you suppose we can't seem to have regain that spirit of cooperation? Even if you don't agree with the other side, there was a way to work around that or work through that in the old days.
Well, you know, I think one big difference is that there are simply some members of Congress who are participating in an alternate reality. I mean, when you have people like Michelle Bachmann who are saying things over and over again that clearly have no basis in fact, that are conspiracy theories, that are rumors, and, you know, that is just going to make it absolutely impossible for there to be any compromise.
I will give you a chance, Daniel, to say something about that as well from the Republican point of view when we come back. We have to take a break, and we'll come back with Daniel Rufty, 26-year-old member of the Republican Party and a delegate to the GOP convention in Tampa, Sam Spencer, 27-year-old president of the Young Democrats of North Carolina and a delegate to the DNC. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation. Knight Foundation promotes informed and engaged communities and helps NPR advance journalism excellence in the digital age. More at knightfoundation.org. In the 70s, 80s, and 90s, there were several organizations designed to set troubled teens straight. Indeed, one of them was named Straight Inc. But sometimes these groups were a bit overzealous in their approach, and that is where writer Cindy Etler's story takes us. She describes herself as a wannabe, not a junkie, not a slut or a stoner, something her mother and people at Straight believed her to be. And she's written the story of her harrowing experience and shares it with us Monday at 9.
On the next Ayan Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup. Each week, we offer analysis of national news with a panel of top journalists. Whether you listen for 5 minutes or an hour, you'll come away with a deeper understanding of what's happening in the world. Join us for the Friday News Roundup.
Join Diane in the News Roundup this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking to Daniel Rufty, a 26-year-old member of the GOP and a delegate to their convention, Sam Spencer, 27-year-old member of the Democratic Party in North Carolina, the president of the party, the Young Democrats, at least, in North Carolina, and a delegate to the DNC. Just prior to the break, Sam was talking about gridlock and how why the two parties can't work together from his point of view, and I'd like to hear it from a Republican point of view.
Well, honestly, I think gridlock's a good thing. Government slowing down is a good thing for me. I want government smaller, not growing.
But it stopped.
Fantastic. I mean, really, with our national debt being $16 trillion, we don't need government to be growing.
I got to tell you.
We need the bills to stop.
There was an article in the paper, I think this week, that talked about this being this is the Congress that has done what's the word I'm looking for? There was a do-nothing Congress during the Truman administration. This Congress has done less. They have passed fewer pieces of legislation. And I thought, is that a bad thing?
Well,
how many laws do you need?
Right, right.
But you have to think about, think of it in doctor's terms. What's a Hippocratic oath? First do no harm. In one place where the gridlock seriously hurt our nation
On
the debt ceiling vote,
okay,
where we put the full faith and credit of the United States of America at risk because a couple of people didn't understand what they were doing with a pro forma vote. Our credit got downgraded because of an absolutely ridiculous discussion. It hurt the markets, and it really endangered the financial security of our entire country.
Was that a wise thing to do, to stop a conversation on the debt ceiling, to threaten to not do anything about it, to put the full faith and credit of the country in jeopardy?
Absolutely not. I think the debt, there's an end to this. I mean, what debt ceiling is okay for the Democrats? I mean, really, $16 trillion right now we're in debt? That's absurd. Do we not understand what $1 trillion is? I mean, that is a ton of money.
But look at why we're in that. When President Clinton left office, he left with a surplus. And then, through no fault of anybody's, we were attacked on 9/11, and we embarked on these two unfunded wars and didn't raise taxes, in fact, cut taxes. How can we expect not to be in debt to that tune of, to the $1 trillion amount that you're talking about?
Right. It's pretty simple. If you spend the money and you don't get any more income from taxes or whatnot, then you're going to be in debt. And so I think that we need to all across the board cut our spending across the board, Democrats and Republicans.
You were in the military. Would that include military?
Absolutely.
Because we spend more on our military than the next 25 countries combined. And those 25 countries are all our allies, all of them. You were in the military. Should we cut the military?
Well, I think
– so where?
I think there's plenty of places to cut in the military. I think everybody needs to cut. We are $16 trillion in debt and on the verge of economic collapse. This debt – is unsustainable. And so as far as the military cutting, I mean, I was a mechanic in the Army. The tool set I had cost $8,000. You could have picked that up at Walmart for like $300. I mean, really, there is plenty of places to cut spending, plenty of places.
Hmm. How do the Democrats feel about that? Because the Democrats are being accused by the Republicans of also running up the debt because of the surplus, not the surplus, the stimulus package that the president put into place when he took office in the face of this economic disaster we were going through at the time.
Well, first, if you look at Forbes magazine, which is no bastion of liberalism, you know, they said that Obama has increased the debt percentage-wise by less than any president since Eisenhower. So I think that I think that's an unfounded claim. And I think what's even more troubling for the fiscal health of the nation is that, you know, Mitt Romney just picked a VP pick, Paul Ryan, and under his plan, you know, people like Mitt Romney would pay an effective tax rate of under 1% because he'd eliminate all taxes on capital gains. And I think one big difference is you can talk about spending, you can talk about making government more efficient, but anybody with a serious budget agrees, you know, just like Simpson Bowles and all of the proposals that have said that we want to be serious about cutting the debt, you have to raise taxes. There's just no avoiding it.
But the president asked for the Simpson-Bowles Commission to do their investigation, and they came across with their recommendations, and he ignored them.
Well, I mean, it's just because they didn't get it right according to the president doesn't mean that we don't have the same sort of, you know, combination that we're going after. I mean, we have to raise taxes. We have to cut spending in areas. There's just major disagreement over how we do it. But if we say that we're not going to ever raise taxes at all under any circumstance, there is absolutely no way for us to get rid of this deficit.
You shook your head when he said we have to raise taxes. I know you don't believe we have to raise taxes. You want to cut taxes, as a matter of fact.
Right.
Is that correct?
Yes, I want to cut taxes. For the private sector to grow, you have to cut the taxes. These tax burdens are hurting the American people and the American jobs that need to be created right now. And, you know,
but if you cut government spending, if you cut the military,
you've got to cut the spending, right?
If you close government offices, you are cutting federal employees. You are taking away their salary. You are cutting, for instance, one of the problems of the military budget, it seems to me, is that they have very cleverly spread the building, for instance, of an airplane across the country. It doesn't just get built in Oregon or Washington State. The engines get built in South Carolina. The propellers get built. The turbines get built in some other state. The wheels get built in a third state. The wings get built in a fifth state. You know, and so if you cut a certain airplane, a weapons system, you're hurting 5 or 6 or 10 or 11 or 13 states. So that's why they don't cut it. Because if you cut government employees, then you raise unemployment.
Well, and I see it as you cut government employees and allow the private sector and businesses to grow, and they can go.
How will
and
they
then,
grow? What will they? How will they grow if you cut military spending? Because the companies that make the airplanes, the companies that make the tanks, the companies that make the bullets, won't be making those products anymore.
The taxes would have to be lower for the businesses. You know, so for a business to grow, they would have to have money to invest in employees. It's like the broken window fallacy of economics. I believe that the jobs will go to the private sector, and the private sector does things a lot better, much more efficient, will house a lot more employees than the government will.
And on the other side of the world. I mean, those, you know, why do we think that those things are going to be made in the United States? I mean, if they're going to be more efficient by making those things and creating jobs, not in America, but somewhere else.
Yeah, I believe in the comparative advantage of different countries and being able to produce things better than the U.S. I do think that.
Well, then what's going to happen here? Because if your worldview were to come true, I think that Sam has a point here. I mean, we all want Walmart prices as consumers.
Right, right.
And up until recently, and when the Olympics came out and we found out that all the uniforms that the Americans wore were made in China, we really didn't care. But that was a patriotic thing. We didn't really care that most of our cars are being made in Korea and Japan. We don't care. We just want the car to be $20,000 or less. We don't want it to be $40,000 and fall apart tomorrow.
Absolutely.
So if people in other parts of the world can make things cheaper than Americans because of economies of scale and because they don't pay their people anything, how can you build the private sector, employment sector in this country while cutting government jobs? Won't that throw us into a tailspin?
Well, I think we need to look at history and see what we did, what worked in history. After World War II, we cut spending by 60%.
After World War II, however, we were the only nations left standing with an infrastructure that was able to produce anything.
Right, and I think that housed a great economic boom that we had right after World War II. Everyone thought that, oh, if we bring back the troops, you know, our economy is going to collapse, all these jobs, you know, where are they going to go? Well, we said, they said, hey, we got to cut spending. So they cut spending by 60%. And that was able to, you know, boost the economy. And that's what I think we should do with this, with the economy right now. I think we should cut big cuts. And I don't mean just from the military. I mean also from the welfare state. I think that we need to – people, everyone, every organization needs to be cut. And I think some bureaucracies need to be eliminated.
But if you look at history, Eisenhower actually raised taxes significantly, especially on the wealthy, and we had the longest period of American prosperity in history.
Sam, you worked for President Obama's election 4 years ago, but a lot, and so did a lot of young people.
Actually, no.
You did not?
I worked for Joe Biden when he was running for president.
Okay.
Well, just to be clear.
Okay. Well, a lot of young people got energized 4 years ago with the Obama campaign. And I'm curious why you think they have not been pleased, why that enthusiasm has fallen off, and what the president could have done better during this first term to maintain the kind of support that he saw in the election. What went wrong?
Well, I think with young voters, you know, the enthusiasm hasn't fallen off for, you know, anybody who knows about his record for young people.
And what happened to hope and change?
Well, I think the economy happened to hope and change. But at the same time, he still completed a lot of things in his administration that were a major change for young people.
Okay, what are those major
accomplishments? Like helping young people under the age of 26 get back on their parents' health insurance, increasing Pell Grants. You know, increasing the promise of prosperity to young people by creating jobs in public service for young people. There are a lot of things that he has done to keep his promise to young Americans.
Those are bad things, in your view?
No, I don't. I think that growing government is not a good thing. Growing government jobs for younger people is not a good thing. I think that government needs to get out of the way of business so they can grow and create sustainable jobs. Because, see, that money that government gets doesn't come from nowhere. You know, the taxpayers pay that money. So it's hard workers paying for other hard workers to work. That idea never will be sustainable long term. And so we need to get out of the way and allow business to thrive, allow businesses to create jobs like they always do. And I think that would be the solution.
I understand that you, Daniel, are a Ron Paul supporter. Does that make you more of a libertarian than a Republican?
No. I think the Republican Party's principles, I stand for those principles of limited government, limited taxes, free markets, and non-intervention.
So in lieu of Ron Paul being on the ticket, which he is not, is Paul Ryan an acceptable stand-in?
I think Paul Ryan's got his good points and his bad points. I think that he has some guts. I think he went after Medicare, you know, that showing that we need to have some reform there because it's unsustainable for the older generation. They paid into these things, and they should get these things. But it needs to be reformed so it can actually be sustainable for them. You know, right now, we all know that there's an end to Social Security and an end to Medicare.
I don't know that's true. I don't know that we all know that there's an end to Social Security. And I think probably part of the problem with Social Security is that people have been robbing the Social Security Trust Fund for years. And that's why there's no money in it, because they've been stealing from it. It's off budget. It is not part of the federal budget. I'm not sure that that's true.
Well, I think that's a good point to bring up because, you know, when the Democrats say, well, Clinton is the one who balanced the budget, you know, the Democrats are the one who balanced it. Well, really, it was the Democrats and Clinton that was stealing from Social Security to balance the budget.
Jump in here. Save your party here, Sam.
Well, you know, I think what Clinton and, you know, Charlotte's own Erskine Bowles did to, you know, balance that budget, and not to mention, I mean, during the Clinton years, nobody was complaining about jobs and prosperity. You know, we were trying to figure out, what do we do with a surplus? I mean, that's the kind of problem that we want to have. But one of the things that I think makes my country great, and one of the reasons I love my country, is because we have this unique balance that you really don't find anywhere in the developed world, where we have one of the lowest effective tax rates in the in the first world. And we provide tons of services, not just through government, but also through the nonprofit sector, to help give people a hand up. Because we all know that so much in life is chance. There is so much that we can't control, and there are so many people who are in Dickensian circumstances, not because of anything that they did or any bad choice that they made, and that's where we step in. That's where government has stepped in.
What about that? As a member of the military who was willing to put yourself in harm's way for the country, you certainly know that life can change like that, and through no circumstances of your own. What do we do about those people for whom life has dealt a bad hand through no fault of their own?
Well, what did we do before government got so involved?
They were poor.
Well, I think the church and the society took care of their people.
Not necessarily. If you go back to prior to the Depression, before Social Security kicked in, you will see that people were poor. They were destitute. And there were cases where the church and family members did not take care of them. Should we just let those people languish?
No, absolutely not. I don't think that – I think people fall through the cracks with you know, the church and the society. And I think a whole lot of people fall through the cracks with government. There's no solution to this that is going to be perfect. You're never going to fix, you know, poverty, and you're never going to fix hunger completely. There's going to be people that are poor.
On the other hand, how do you justify taking my money and giving it to people who aren't working?
Well, I think that that part of the equation is a little overblown. I think that, yeah, we all know that there are some people who cheat. And some people who are getting a free ride. Are those the majority of the people on welfare? Are those the majority of people on Medicaid?
I don't think so. That the right of the government to do, to confiscate my money and give it to somebody who isn't working, whether or not it's to a fault of their own? These people who fell into hard times because of the recession, who haven't worked for 3 years because they can't get a job even though they're trying diligently to find one, is it the right of the government? Was it within their purview to give our tax dollars to those people?
Yeah, that's why we have elections. And if you think that we should not be doing that, you go out and you vote and you send those people home.
Describe the Democrats' worldview from a Republican point of view.
Well, I think they're very compassionate people, and I think that, you know, they have an emotional level on some things, but I think they're misguided on the approach to fix the problems. I think that government getting involved, doing that, like you said, that Robin Hood mentality, stealing from the rich, giving to the poor, is all good in the movies, but it's not cool in real life. You know, these people worked hard for their money, and they should be able, that's their property, their money. They should be able to do with it what they want to do with it.
Except we pay for things we don't believe in all the time. We've been funding several wars that people don't believe in.
Right.
We fund public schools when we don't have children.
And I'm completely against the wars. And I think the younger people really got excited about Obama because he was against the wars. He said, you know, I want to end the war and bring back the troops. And I remember in his campaign speech, he said, I'm going to bring back the troops day one, and you can take that to the bank. That's a quote from Obama. What happened day one?
He became president.
And the troops stayed in Iraq and Afghanistan. And not only there, he started another war with Libya. That's not what the younger voters wanted.
He did not start a war with Libya.
Well, bombing is, to me, considered war.
Okay. We have to take a break. When we come back, I want to get your point of view of the Republican view of life as a Democrat. And then we'll talk about some of the other of the key issues that are going to mark this campaign. From through the eyes of Sam Spencer, 27-year-old president of the Young Democrats of North Carolina, Daniel Rufty, 26-year-old member of the Mecklenburg County Young Republicans, both going to their respective conventions as delegates. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Charlotte-Mecklenburg Stormwater Services. In Charlotte-Mecklenburg, flooding kills more people than tornadoes and lightning combined. Protect families and belongings through ARC, awareness, responsibility, and knowledge. More at stormwater.charmec.org. Tom Jelton's in for Diane Rehm today at 10 o'clock with the panel of journalists to talk about the week's top stories. A Pennsylvania judge upheld a controversial voter ID law that will go into effect starting this election day. And tens of thousands of undocumented immigrants lined up in cities across the country this week to apply for deportation deferrals allowed by a new federal program. Those stories and more. And if you'd like to join our conversation, 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323. 800-603-WFAE or WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. We're coming right back.
Hi, it's us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. Do you have a parent who should no longer drive?
No, but my kids claim they do.
Well, if you ever find yourself with an unwanted car for any reason, think about donating it to support this station. For all the details, call 1-866-789-TMCP.
TMCP?
Yeah, take my car, please.
That's 866-789-8627.
Or go to WFAE.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Daniel Rufty is with us, member of the Republican Party and a delegate to their convention. He's 26. Sam Spencer is the president of the Young Democrats, a delegate to his convention, and he's 27. I want to get, Sam, your take on the Republicans' worldview. We just got the Republican take on the Democrats' worldview.
Well, you know, I think the Republican Party is, you know, just like the Democratic Party, is a party where a bunch of people come from very diverse worldviews. I think you have people who are social conservatives and, you know, their faith completely guides their approach to the electoral process and the policy. That's the number one thing in their life. You also have people who, you know, like Paul Ryan, come from more of this, you know, Ayn Rand objectivist school of thought. And then you also have people who are like the Koch brothers, who really think that industry is the be-all and end-all of American prosperity, and, you know, our government should do everything it can to get out of the way for business.
Have you read Ayn Rand?
I have.
Do you agree with what she talks about in her
something
shrugged?
Yeah.
Have you read Upton Sinclair?
No.
Because Upton Sinclair wrote books about the meatpacking industry back before regulation, and it's pretty disgusting and shocking, and it kind of justifies the need for some sort of government regulation. And I know that you don't believe in government regulation. Can industry be trusted to run through the streets unfettered?
I think we need to understand what government is. You know, what is, for me, I think government is politicians. You know, I think the connection between the actual politicians in government and our saying the government has been severed. These are politicians. These are people like Harry Reid.
Most of the government is actually bureaucrats.
Right, bureaucrats. I'm trying to get to the point where it's like the idea, who are politicians? That's our government. You know, for me, I think they're crooked. They lie. It's all about money. And that's both parties. Both parties are creating a lot of problems for us.
Then I'm really curious as to why you want to be involved in party politics.
Because I want to get back to the Constitution. I want to get back to that oath I took. I want to bring back the principles of the Constitution and limited government. Exactly that's stated in the Constitution. I don't want to twist it. I don't want to do it word for word, how the founders interpreted it.
He quoted the president in the last segment saying he would end the wars on day one. I don't know if that's an accurate quote. I'll take your word for it. I can't.
Check it out on YouTube.
I can't do that right now, so I'll take your word for it. If that's true, did the president lie?
I'll take your word for it. I think the reality of governing is a lot harder than campaigning. And I think one thing that would really fix political discourse in this country is that we just need to step back as Americans and start thinking like the British and or some other countries in the world and go, you know what? Our politicians aren't perfect. Government isn't perfect. Anything that's made of man is not going to be perfect. And we should absolutely hold everybody to high ethical standards. But
And the other part of the problem is the enormous amount of money that it takes to get elected to any office in this country. It's a constant cash machine. Bill writes, negative campaigning, slanted and misleading ads from super PACs and anonymous organizations, along with an abundance of media bias, has helped to discourage many people from getting involved in politics. As young, new blood, what would you do, if anything, to turn this around? Daniel.
Well, money in politics is never going to go away. Money is like water. It'll go around any obstacle you put in its way. You know, I think it's disgusting how much money is in politics. You know, hardworking, normal people can't run for election because there's you have to have so much money to win. And for me, I really wish that the voters would get out there and investigate the people that are running and make a wise, informed decision about who is running for those offices.
And where would they get their information about those people who are running?
Well, I think that, you know, you can get your news from the mass media, but I think it's also you need to go back and do your own personal research. You know, go through the different policies, see how they've actually voted. Don't listen to what the politicians, you know, tell you. Mm-hmm. Go out and research that. Spend a little bit of time. This is your country. This is your money. This is, you know, your life at stake here. You have to go investigate it yourself.
Let me get your take, Sam, on Bill's question. As young, new blood, what would you do, if anything, to turn this trend around?
Well, you know, as I said earlier, voting, the electoral process, it is the most sacred, important institution in our entire country from which everything else derives, and it has to be protected. I mean, I know there's a movement to amend the Constitution to overrule the Citizens United decision. I would be in support of that. I think it's interesting you bring up Upton Sinclair because you think about the jungle, you think about the old adage that there are two things that you don't want to watch, sausage being made and bills being made. And unfortunately, when it comes to the legislative process of bills being made these days, that's where we see so much of the money coming
in.
And
isn't that part of the problem also? We're seeing how the sausage is made in Washington. We didn't used to do that because we didn't have the 24-hour news cycle, and we didn't have the need to be sensational in the media in order to drive ratings, because news departments were not meant to be profit centers back in the early days of broadcasting, at least. Isn't that part of the problem?
Well, I think, you know, you look at a show like Mad Men, right? Mad Men would not be possible in this day and age, where you've got you have Twitter, you have social networking, you have Facebook. If Don Draper's having an affair and he checks in the Foursquare, you know it's not going to work out so much. So a lot of the personal dirty laundry that went, you know, yeah, that was around in Washington wasn't out for everybody to see. And I think, again, you know, people are being disabused of this childish notion that their politicians are perfect, and it's been pretty jarring for the nation.
I think that one way to get businesses and all this money out of politics is you got to look at, well, why do businesses send all this money to super PACs and to help a campaign? You know, look at Obama's top contributors, Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, Chase. I don't think those are people that their interest is in the American people. I think it's in their own business interest.
Same is true on the Republican side, though.
Same is true. I'm not saying it's just the Democrats that are creating these problems. Because, I think Republicans are too.
Because, as we all know, corporations are people.
Right. Absolutely.
You believe that?
Well, I think that corporations are owned by people. I think that is. Yes, I think that corporations are owned by people.
Yes, but the Supreme Court said essentially they are people. And the problem with that to me is, and I'll put my personal bias on the line here, the problem with that to me is that I don't have the hundreds of billions of dollars that a corporation has for me to fight if I don't agree with what they say.
Well, why do businesses get involved? Why do they donate? They do it so they can get an advantage over the other companies, have a monopoly in an industry. So they donate all this money, you know, to Obama and other politicians to get an advantage over the other companies.
Correct.
If government got out of the way with business, they'd be like, well, if they're not going to give me the monopoly that I want, if I donate to them, there'd be no point to donate to them. So I think that's really the only solution to get rid of all this money in politics.
Okay, put your headphones on. We'll take some phone calls here from people who have been hanging on for a while. Let's begin with Greg in Charlotte.
Hello. Hey, can you guys hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
Sorry about that. And I just want three quick topics there that won't be taken but a second. Is no one's talking about the Glass-Steagall Act that was taken away in 1999 under Clinton with Republicans controlling Congress, which separates the investment banking from commercial banking and insurance banking, which caused a derivative meltdown of the worldwide debt that they're cutting austerity worldwide, and we want taxes raised and social programs all cut, when this isn't our debt, it's the gambling bank's derivative debt that they knew it was bad, that they were trading around the world and slicing and dicing, and we need to it's a Marcy Kessler's bill in Congress right now, is to reestablish that and write off all this derivative debt. Otherwise, you can never bail out the world or the United States, no matter what you guys talk about.
All right, now that's a good example of deregulation. And we now see what happened as a result of that deregulation. So do you want to amend your philosophy about the government getting out of the way?
No, I think the government needs to get out of the way. I think that.
But look what happened when they got out of the way.
Well, they didn't exactly get out of the way. With the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, they created policies for no-doc loans.
Right, but what about that?
They
because
created the problem.
The part of the problem was the fact that we had these two organizations, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, who are kind of government organizations but kind of not, and in your opinion, the Federal Reserve as well,
right?
That are also not government organizations, but the government has their fingers in the pie, who also did some very bad things,
yeah,
despite regulation.
Well, first, to respond to the caller, I will say the Young Democrats, we're actually crafting a platform plank right now to support re-adding Glass-Steagall to U.S. code. And I definitely very strongly believe that Gordon Gekko shouldn't be gambling with the savings and loans money. But
you mentioned the platform, and I'm just curious before we go to the next phone call. Can you be a serious Democrat or a serious Republican and disagree with one or two or three primary planks in the party's platform?
Well, I don't know what a primary plank is, but I think you can definitely disagree with the platform. The Democrats are a big tent party, and Democrats who are running in some parts of the country believe different things on things like social issues than Democrats who run in other parts of the country. But we all fundamentally believe that government has an important role to play in improving the lives of U.S. citizens.
Daniel?
I think that you can disagree with some parts of the platform and still be a part of that party. You kind of look at the different parties. There's a lot more than two. A lot of people try to just focus on the two, but there's a lot more than two. And I think that you should find the party that you fit with best ideology-wise and, get involved.
Okay. Don in Harrisburg, welcome.
Hi, Mike. I like your program.
Thank you.
I like you, but I'd like to clarify something that you said earlier. It was incorrect.
Okay.
I think Daniel was speaking, and you jumped in and said, well, Dwight Eisenhower brought in a big period of prosperity.
No, that was our guest, Sam Spencer.
Sorry about that. Then I will accuse Sam of misspeaking. Now, here's what happened, as I recall. Now, John Kennedy followed Dwight Eisenhower. The economy was not doing well. I was around then. You were, too. All right. Those guys weren't. John Kennedy's slogan for his campaign was, let's get this country moving again, because the economy was slow like it is now. Kennedy got elected, and Kennedy, right, he wasn't in office long before he was killed, but while he was there, he lowered taxes on the wealthiest people in the United States, the top tax rate, which at that time was $200,000 or more, a yearly income. He lowered that rate from 91%, believe it or not, to 64%. That is probably the greatest tax decrease that's ever happened in the history of the United States since we've had income tax. And that ushered in a great period of prosperity, which was referred to. All right, now then, also, Erskine Bowles, was it you, Mike, that mentioned Erskine Bowles?
No, that was also Sam.
Okay, well, all right, sorry about that. Well, Erskine Bowles was on Squawk Box, which is, I call it the stock market channel, just last week.
Right.
He was on with Alan Simpson and also Warren Buffett, and they were acknowledging Erskine as the big economic brain in that group. And Erskine Bowles said, we are headed straight toward a debt crisis in this country. is big, a great catastrophe. That's what Erskine Bowles said. I got one more comment. Harry Reid recently accused Mitt Romney of not paying taxes for so many years, all right? It goes on the basis of a rumor that he heard, which he refuses to substantiate. Okay, now all of the Democrats, the Obama crowd is saying, okay, then Mitt Romney should prove his innocence. Well, the person who makes the accusation should prove the accusation. They're putting the foot on the shoe on the wrong foot.
Okay, and do you think that we are, when we focus on things like Romney releasing his tax returns or President Obama releasing his birth certificate, that we're just wasting our time, we're deflecting attention away from the key issues that we really do need to solve in the next 4 to 8 years?
Absolutely. I think that it's a complete distraction. We have some serious issues right now in this country. We're on the verge of economic collapse with a $16 trillion debt and increasing at an astronomically fast rate.
Who should we blame for that? The media? This focus on minutia when it should be focused on the big issues? Or should we blame ourselves because we like to hear news about Christina Aguilera as opposed to Mitt Romney, Paul Ryan, Obama, and Biden?
I think there's a balancing act that the media can do with, given, some of those other, distraction issues and also focus on the substance.
Is the media liberal?
I think that I'd probably say the majority of media is liberal.
Is the media liberal?
I'd say that, as Stephen Colbert said, reality has a well-known liberal bias.
I don't know what that means.
but I do think
it's funny.
on the tax issue, it's stuff like this. When Mitt Romney says that he's going to run on his business record, then his business record and how he conducts his business is fair game. Barack Obama didn't run on being a United States citizen, and that birth certificate debate, I'm just going to completely agree with you on this one. That was the biggest distraction I think we've had in a while.
Quickly, because I have 30 seconds, what are you most looking forward to about participating in the convention, the Democratic convention?
Celebrating the Democratic spirit and reelecting the president.
The Republican convention.
And I'm excited about getting to the platform and voting on some substance in the party and straightening out issues within the nation.
And because you're a Ron Paul supporter, do you think the Romney-Ryan ticket will involve some of those Paul principles?
I think that it will involve some, but the majority, no.
And the spirit of the Democratic Party, in a nutshell, is?
America is a country that's concerned about equality.
Sam Spencer, 27, president of the Young Democrats, member of the Democratic delegate to the convention from North Carolina, Daniel Ruffty, 26, a member of the Mecklenburg County Young Republicans, and a delegate at the GOP convention. Thank you for the